And we're back after a long extended break with episode one, I guess, of season three we're on now. I'm Dan Prong, coming from Buffalo, New York.
Otto Eisenberg, Utica, New York.
And the extended break was caused by my going back for a master's degree on my end, and parenting kind of gets in the way, so we're making this episode today during my son's nap. Hopefully it's a nice long 2-3 hour snooze.
We knew it was about time to record another one of these when we got to texting again every day about hockey, and that's how we started this podcast. So it sounds about right that that's the reason we start up another episode.
That's right. So we've got a lot to get to. Biggest thing, I think internationally, it would be the announcement the NHL or Gary Bettman made at the All-Star game was there's going to be a new version of the World Cup. We'll call it World Cup 2.0.
Yes, no real ties to the original World Cups or so, but a great idea nonetheless to get hockey players involved internationally. And they're having it the first one in 2016, and then it'll be every 4 years. And if my math is right, that means it runs opposite of the Winter Olympics years.
Yeah, I think that's a good idea. That it keeps international focus on a little bit more. My only thing is they, if it's not, I have great memories of watching that '96 World Cup with Richter and Hall and all the rest of the American team. I remember watching those games. That final was fantastic. So the fact that it's not going to be a true international competition is, takes a little bit away from it for me. I think they should have just changed the name along with everything. Maybe gone with like the Commissioner's Cup or whatever it wanted to be, not necessarily the World Cup.
With this upcoming version, it's the main six teams: U.S., Canada, Czech, Finland, Russia, Sweden. Then there's the two All-Star teams, the U23 North America team and the European All-Stars. I did read today that in 2020 they're going to try and do a qualifying tournament to replace those two All-Star teams. They said that this year there just wasn't enough time to do and set up the pre-qual tournaments to fill those two spots.
Yeah, and I understand that. I get that point. I think the real positive out of this is that you're going to be guaranteed Jack Eichel. You're going to be guaranteed Connor McDavid on that under 23 team. You get a guy like Anze Kopitar, who is a big name, who comes from a small country, Slovenia. They're probably not going to make. Or they might, but you never know. They're probably not going to make the tournament. Same with a guy, even though he's not a huge star in the NHL quite yet, was the leading vote getter thanks to his countryman, Zemgus Girgensons, of Latvia. So you'll see guys like that. You'll see more names than opposed to guys coming out of Switzerland who you've never heard of, who just are going to go right back to the European leagues and never be heard from North American fans.
I think it's a good experience. I think we're going to get a feel for it in that first year of how it goes with those two All-Star teams, and then I would assume that they could have the option to keep it that way if it is successful. A lot of these young kids that you're going to see on the U23 team are kids that aren't quite to stardom yet for the most part, but they will get that experience out now and. Everybody will get to see a bit more of them as opposed to if you're trying to throw them on Team USA or Team Canada. You'll see a little bit more of them this way.
Yeah, I think if somebody like Tyler Seguin, who could have been on the Canadian Olympic team, if it, he'll probably be on the next one considering where he is now, but you could have had him in an international tournament last year. And I mean, my goodness, he had a great season, breakout season last year. Now you're going to get those young players right before they make the jump, so I think it'll be exciting. You'll have guys like I said, McDavid and Eichel. Who knows what other talent's going to be out there that we haven't even heard about yet.
Right, exactly, and that's the key to this whole thing. These kids get drafted at 18 years old. that time and others don't. But it'll be an experience. I mean, I know I get up now for the IIHF World Tournament, but most of the games are played at 5 a.m. our time, and I'll get up in the morning and watch those just because it's more hockey to watch, and this is going to be a whole other level above that. So.
Yeah, word is it's going to be hosted in Toronto and Montreal, and that's, you know, understandable to the biggest markets, hockey craze markets. There's talk about some exhibition games being played here in Buffalo, which I'm positive will sell out. Buffalo's traditionally a very strong market for the NHL, professional hockey. They actually put a bid in to host the World Juniors the next time it comes back to the U.S. So it's up between them, Tampa, and Pittsburgh. So it'll be interesting to see.
Excellent. And that's with all the work at the Harbor Center, I'm hearing that stuff's pretty amazing right now.
Yeah, I haven't been down there yet. I've had a couple friends go and say that it's just outstanding. The whole area now, you walk down and you used to be all construction, or even before it was just an empty parking lot, vacant lot, and now it's this beautiful building. I know Canisius has been drawing really well for the college games that are being played there, and also the hotel downtown has really brought it up, and if they can somehow figure out a way to get the Bills Stadium downtown, I think it's going to really, really make that whole district and area just one of the best in North America, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like. Hopefully they're successful with all that.
Yeah. So, speaking of the Sabres, they are right where they want to be, at the bottom of the standings. They had a big Connor McDavid, Jack Eichel, I guess they call it the McEichel Bowl, a couple nights ago against Edmonton. Edmonton came away with the 2 points, but Buffalo feels better about the game.
Absolutely.
They're currently 6 points clear of Edmonton, and they're doing exactly what they want. What's exciting is when you watch them play, you're seeing improvements from the guys that you know are going to be here. You're seeing improvements from Girgensons. He is what he is. I think you'd like to see a little bit more of a scoring touch, but he's shown that at times this season. You see Ristolainen and Zadorov. For a brief period, for about a 10-game stretch, they were paired together, and they were by far their best pairing on the back end. You're seeing Nick Delorier become a power forward on their third and fourth lines. That's really as far as the guys that are here. You know, Tyler Ennis has been what Tyler Ennis has been. That's a 50 to 70 point scorer in the NHL. If he's going to be around, personally, I would trade him. But those guys that are going to be around, they're showing out improvement. They're playing well. The guys that aren't going to be around are really have been the ones that have caused them trouble. I mean, Andre Benoit and Andre Mazaros on defense I'm pretty sure you and I could go back there and get the same results.
I do see this year they have a negative 85 goal differential with only 94 goals scored.
I don't know how many people believe in the Corsi Fenwick stuff. I'm starting to believe in it more, but their Corsi was close to almost negative 1,000, and we're not even through the entire season. If comparison, the next highest one is like negative 90.
You know, an odd stat on them too, on home ice, they're 10-13-2, which is respectable. On the road, they're 4-20-1.
Oh yeah. They've been just brutally awful away from home. And, you know, they're talking about being mentally frail in games that it's, you know, they're tied 1-1 and going into the third. And they just, it's been bad. It's been painful to watch at times, but it's one of those things where I'm happy if they play well and they win, but I'm happy if they play like crap and they lose. So,
yeah, you get that pick in there and you get to watch it. See what they're going to do. I with the changes to my TV setup this year, I do not get any of the Buffalo games, so I haven't been able to witness any of this dramatic losing. But yeah. From everything I hear, nothing is. I guess it's right on plan, you would say,
yep.
For what they're looking for.
Yep, and so it's pretty much between them and Arizona's just recently came out and announced that they're, with a couple injuries and how poorly they've been playing, they're going to join the tank parade. And so it's between Buffalo and Edmonton and Arizona, but Arizona is about 9 points up on everybody, so they might be tough to catch Buffalo for them.
Arizona and Carolina both have 40 points. Edmonton with 35, and the Sabres with 31.
So dovetailing off that a little bit, the Amerks, who everyone thought was going to be a little bit more competitive. I for one thought they had what had a good mix of veterans and prospects. But honestly, between the injuries in Buffalo, which have caused call-ups, and the injuries in Rochester, they've just kind of been a tire fire. The couple bright spots have been Joel Armia has really continued what he started in the playoffs, being almost a point a game per player. He's been battling a couple injuries, but seems like every week he's dropping a highlight goal or play. And he's really playing a 200-foot game. The goal he scored the other night, he came back on his own blue line, picked a guy's pocket, made a pass, got the puck back on a give and go, and then drove through four guys and shelved a backhander. So he's really been a dominant player for the Amerks. I think whenever he does get a chance to get called up, he plays in a scoring role. I think you'll really see some production out of him. I think he's a very similar player, talent-wise, to Vanek. Doesn't stay in front of the net as much as Vanek does, but the hands and quick release are very similar to that. And his ability around the wall is very strong. The other one is Gregorenko. Everyone last year really dumped on this guy because he didn't make the Sabres and then didn't want to go back to junior. Ended up going back, and then when he came to Rochester, he played about 10 games, and I think he only had 4 or 5 points. This year started off really strong, has played a good two-way game, was player of the week for the AHL a couple weeks ago. So he's kind of been as Armia goes, so goes Grigorenko. I haven't quite seen that consistency, which tends to be one of the last things to come for a young player. I found over the years that them gaining consistency tends to be the last thing to come before they go up to full time.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've been seeing a little bit of that in Utica this year. Utica had their outstanding start. They were getting absolutely phenomenal goaltending, and now they're just getting good to even still great at times goaltending, but now they're not scoring goals like they were to open up the season. They've been missing some of the support from Nicholas Jensen. He was one that was expected to have a big year scoring wise. Cal O'Reilly's having a heck of a season with assists, but not quite as many goals as you'd like to see. So they lack the consistency as well, and they do have a very young team. Their team built with speed, and a lot of that fight is what got them through the first part of the season. And lately, they've gone on a run where they've gone 3-6-0-1. To kind of fall back in. They're still in first place in the West, but falling back into more of what you might have expected this year. Of course, in Utica, the expectations were built up with that hot start that they were just going to run the league, and when that doesn't happen, people stop showing up a little bit. So, be interesting to see how the rest of the season plays out here.
Yeah, and with their goaltending situation, Markstrom, as long as he stays healthy, I think they're going to be a tough team to beat come playoff time. You really he's really shown this year an ability to take over games that he hadn't shown in previous years.
And then even with him, though, there's been those inconsistent games. He's had, I believe, 3 games this year where he's given up 5 or more goals. So there's the one again. I know they were in Rochester for one of them. It came out right after that he had an injury and he missed. I think it was 2 weeks that he missed. New Year's Day, he gave up 5 goals on 17 shots and was pulled in a loss to San Antonio. So he has his days where he's not great, but overall this season he has been fun to watch, and it's kind of fun to watch some of these fans that said that they didn't want him here because they were in love with Joakim. Kind of take it back now and welcome Markstrom in.
Well, it's pretty easy to welcome an all-star into your lineup.
An all-star MVP hit that.
Oh, yeah. He got the Ryan Johansson treatment of the all-star MVP.
He gave up 2 goals on 18 shots in the first period after being voted starter for the AHL all-star team. He played well, you know. For an all-star game, you can only ask so much. And facing 18 shots and only letting in two, that's not terrible.
No, that's a good period for the Sabres, too.
Absolutely.
So speaking of the all-star game, you were there. You watched the skills competition. They had the all-star game. They don't do the draft in the AHL, mostly because they're not really household names.
No household names, and there's so much movement. I mean, even the week right leading up to the game, there were players in and out from being called up, sent down, and injuries and everything else. That if they would have had a draft 2 days before, it would have been interesting to see who was still around for the actual game.
Oh, yeah, and turned out to be a good turnout. Everything went as planned?
Oh, yeah, there was the problem with it, to me, is they held it Sunday, Monday, which I get because they were trying to not compete with the NHL All-Star Game. But if it was me, I would have put it off another weekend before or after, one way or the other, just so you can hold it on a Saturday and Sunday. But regardless, Sunday night was the skills competition, and the odd was packed. They took out the glass so you could stand on the front row, and you were basically on the ice to watch all the skills competitions. The players were interacting with the fans, and it was cool to watch. There's a buzz in the building that I haven't felt in a long time here. It was a packed house for that. And the skills competition, the East ended up winning 15-11, for what it's worth. They do a lot more of the breakaway stuff for the AHL. But that was, it was fantastic. Colin Miller from Manchester, he won both the fastest skater competition and the hardest shot competition. His hardest shot was 105.5 miles an hour, so that as soon as it left his stick, you knew he had a pretty good mark there. Then the actual game on Monday, it appeared to me that people showed up expecting to see a hockey game, because the building was pretty full when the game started, and then as it went on, it just kind of emptied out. By the third, it was down a bit, but at the same time, it is a Monday night. It's a high-scoring game, so the game didn't end until almost 10:15, so I wasn't too surprised that it emptied out, not being a Comets game.
Yeah, I think you hit it on the head. I think it's a combination of it's getting late with all the goals being scored, and it's a Monday night, and also some people, for whatever reason, they still think it's going to be a good traditional hockey game. It is what it is. The guys don't want to get hurt. They already play so many games, such a difficult schedule, especially in the AHL where they're riding buses to most of their games. There's no way guys are going to be laying out for block shots and throwing hip checks and body checks, whatever. I think they can keep the game. That's fine. You know, it is what it is. But I think the skills competition is really what drives both the AHL and the NHL All-Star Weekend. You know, I think the NHL draft that they hope fantasy draft with Team Taves and Team Foligno was fantastic for someone like myself. I mean, I sat here and watched the draft the whole way through, and just had a couple funny moments. Really interesting to watch how when Taves drafted Kessel, he says, "Oh, well, you know, we want somebody who's really coachable." There's a shot to the Toronto media, and then all of a sudden they realize they can trade Kessel for Sagan, and vice versa, and that they've been traded before, and it worked out for both teams. That was kind of a shot to to Toronto again, and you got to see the guys for who they are. You know, they were just having a lot of fun, and it's always funny watching people be drunk anyway. So
yeah, that's what I heard a lot of. They were they had the cups and they were keeping the cups pretty full for him.
Yeah, Ovechkin was just he was blitzed, but it was good fun to watch, and even my wife, who's not a hockey fan, got a couple chuckles out of what they were going on about. So the skills competition, I don't know if they did it at the AHL. Did they do that whole team relay race where the NHL they had to have three players take one timers from their off wing, different locations, and then they had to have a player do a stick handling, then another just agility skating. Another player had to feed saucer passes over a barrier into these tiny little goals, and that was in the neutral zone. And then they had the goalies shoot over a barrier all the way down to empty net. There's this team relay, and I thought that was the best part of the whole thing. I could care less about the breakaway stuff, the creativity, whatever. But I loved the. I love that relay race. That was great.
Yeah, I got to watch that. They did not have that as part of the AHL one. The AHL was much more simplistic. Your typical events, fastest skater, accuracy shooting, agility skating, or puck handling, I should say. And then a couple breakaway relay type things. And they did a 3-on-0 event as well. I don't remember seeing that one for the NHL game, but it could have been. It was interesting, but when you're going 3-on-0 on a goalie, you would expect more goals than there were, actually, and the goalies fared pretty well in that.
Yeah, and now they hosted some stuff at the Turning Stone Casino, correct?
Yes, they did. They did a Hall of Fame induction ceremony there. That was during the day on Monday. That's another one of those ones that I would have liked to see, but can't really get out of work just to go to a induction ceremony. I was talking to a couple people, and they said that it was just awesome, though. They had nothing but good things to say about it. The stories that some of the players were telling, the stuff like that, they said it was fantastic.
Bronco Horvath, former Amerk, went in to the AHL Hall of Fame. That's pretty cool. Always got a shout out for former Amerks. I think it was a good move on their part to anytime you can incorporate a major sponsor like Turning Stone. They've got the hotel rooms there. They've got the casino. Obviously, you can bring more fans in. It's more enticing for fans out of town to come in and enjoy the whole weekend or the whole experience. So that was a good idea on their part, in my opinion. I understand. I understand what you're saying. It's a tough spot. To get out on time, but that was interesting as well.
Oh yeah, and I it's just another one of those things. I think if they could work it into a Saturday Sunday, I think you would just have a lot more people there with that too. I'll be interested to see now, because in my opinion, it was an incredibly successful event. I'll be curious to see if they start to work with Syracuse, because they could do the same exact setup. Because the Turning Stone's pretty much split distance between Syracuse and Utica.
Right.
So they could do the same setup with that if they decided they wanted to bring the All-Star event to Syracuse as well.
That's true. I know in the past the league's pretty much had to try to give away the All-Star game just because of the financial burden it brings.
Yep.
But it sounded like everything went well in Utica this year. So
They had the owner of the Crunch on the radio the other day, and he said he did put in a proposal to do it, and he said they would do it unlike anybody else. I mean, you're limited to what you can do, but if he's supportive of that, I think it would be another good thing. I was telling my wife I would go out of my way to go out to Syracuse to watch it again if it was an opportunity that we were given. So,
and he's quite the promoter. I wouldn't be surprised if you saw some stuff involving the Carrier Dome. Like you said, you could involve the casino. He might even try to do an outdoor thing for the All-Star game. So
that would be Howard Dolgan we're talking talking about.
Yep. He's quite the promoter. I think he made his money as a boxing promoter, so wouldn't surprise me in the least.
They had the very successful Frozen Dome Classic this year.
Yep.
We didn't get to talk about that, and it's kind of out of the way now, but that was a cool event. We ended up sitting up top. It was fine. You know, they didn't hold it lengthwise. They were close enough to the rink that you could see everything. And with all the games they held, the ice wasn't the greatest. If you want to hear all my thoughts on it, I did write a blog on it. Overall, it was successful, but there were some things that they could have done a little bit better.
And you kind of chalk that up to finances in the long run, in my opinion.
Timing, I think, more than anything. They had less than a week to put it in, and they had less than a day to get it out after the event was over to get Syracuse basketball back in. So that was a big part of what they did in terms of getting it out of there. So
okay. So we mentioned the AHL All-Star Weekend included the Hall of Fame inductions. This kind of goes along with our next topic about the AHL moving west and how I perceive it to affect the league in general. So before we get into that, as I said, the AHL is moving 5 teams west, making a Pacific Division. We have Edmonton's taking their team from Oklahoma City and moving them to Bakersfield. The Ducks are moving their Anaheim Ducks are moving their team from Portland, Maine to, I think they're going into San Diego, I heard. The Kings are moving from Manchester into another California market. I think it's right in LA. Or Orlando Beach, that's what it was, right? Orlando, California?
I'm currently looking for the full list.
I think it's Ontario, California. That's what it is. Ontario, California. And then Calgary is moving from Adirondack, who just came into the AHL this year, and they're taking their team to back out west. I think they're going to Abbotsford again, aren't they?
They could be.
And so those 5 teams are moving west, and the basis of that move is basically they don't want to have to keep an extra player on their NHL roster for salary cap purposes, because it's nearly impossible to get a player from the morning in Portland, Maine to Anaheim, California in the same day. And so they have to keep that extra player on their roster, which prevents them from, could restrict them salary cap wise. So I get that. They also, part of the reason they claim is for development purposes. These teams are spending too much time traveling back and forth. They want them closer so that their NHL guys can work with their NHL staff can work with them more often. And also they want to cut the number of games down for the entire league, maybe down to like 72 or even, I've heard a couple times, 70 games.
I saw the couple where they were saying 68 games or so.
Yeah. And my whole thing is I'm with Rob Sanderson from the radio station here in Rochester, who covers the Amerks. I don't care if they cut the number of games down, as long as they cut the number of games down for everybody across the board.
Right. Yeah, so you can't have a division play less than the rest.
Yeah.
I'm looking here. The Flames are moving their team to Stockton, California, and the ECH affiliate is moving to Glens Falls.
Okay. So Glens Falls will have hockey again. That's good. We'll see if they keep drawing for East Coast Hockey League team. So then the next question becomes Utica. What is Utica and Vancouver? Their relationship's good for another year. I saw that the GM Jim Benning of the Canucks said they're committed for another year. But long term, you got to figure that Vancouver is going to want their players closer to home as well.
Yeah, with the option being there, it makes sense to be here when there was only one other team out there. Then, as much as I want to see them stay, I just can't see it going any other way than moving them out there. I would think that something comes in to Utica again. Friday night was the 16th sellout of the year. So the fan support is there for the games. So we'll see what they do. I wouldn't be surprised to see Vancouver leave, but I wouldn't be surprised to see another team come in. A couple people I've talked to around here that tend to know the connections say that there is a lot of interest in other teams coming to Utica. So obviously I don't know who those teams are, but it sounds good for hockey in Utica, regardless of who it is.
One team that might make sense, might move out is Winnipeg might move away from St. John's, Newfoundland. Now that Portland, Maine isn't in the league anymore, Newfoundland's really way out there to another extreme on the northeast end. So they might move in to Utica, cut the distance down a little bit, but also make them closer to the rest of the teams in the league. But I've also heard Winnipeg is looking to bring them into Ontario, Canada, somewhere in Thunder Bay area, possibly.
Yeah.
One thing I do know about the Dave Andrews, president of the AHL, is that he will strive to keep 30 teams in the league, one for each NHL team, and will try to make it the best that they can. He's proven multiple times over and over again to be able to make those arrangements and get the best situations for everyone involved. We'd love to see, obviously, as New Yorkers, we would love to see the teams in New York stay in the league in the AHL. I know when Binghamton lost the Rangers before the Senators came in, they just didn't support the ECHL team that was in there. Syracuse didn't really support one when they had a team. And I know that anytime there was talk about Rochester leaving the league, they would not support an ECHL team because the talent is definitely inferior to what the AHL provides. Any thoughts on all that?
Not particularly. I don't think an ECHL team would succeed here either. And just like you said, we want to see our New York teams. It's fun to have the rivalry with teams around the league. We were at the All-Star game, and obviously the three Comets on the roster got deafening ovations. But along with that, as soon as the two Syracuse players were announced, you got deafening boos for them. So it was kind of a fun back and forth with that. You don't get quite the rivalry with the rest of the teams. I think Rochester's lack this year, just because we haven't played the 18 games against them yet. So
Right. That'll pick up. And also, I think there could be a rivalry there with the ECHL if Elmira keeps their team, if Utica got there, but it's different situations. So my comment earlier about Hall of Fame stuff and the effect this move west is going to have is guys that get picked put in the Hall of Fame in the AHL, especially players, are guys that are career AHLers. I'm talking about guys like Jody Gage. Bronco Horvath had a long career in the AHL. Guys like Darren Haydar, who just recently retired. Jason Krog will be another one that's going to go in. Keith Acoin, who's still playing in Chicago. I think those guys, that breed of player, is going to be eliminated from the AHL eventually. We've already seen, Hershey has won so many cups and been competitive for so many years because they would say to their parent club, Washington, okay, you give us 10 prospects and we're going to fill out the rest of the roster with veteran guys. And then about 10 years ago, the league limited how many veterans you could have on a team down to 6. And, the teams that are willing to pay for that expensive veteran, were consistently Calder Cup contenders. Very rarely would you see a team get run and make a deep run in the playoffs who was all consisted of prospects. And, one word you kept hearing during the press conference and all the articles that were written about the AHL moving west was development, development, development. And that means, to me, it means the death of the veteran AHL player.
Yeah, I would agree. That's the whole point of moving your teams west is to have your skill guys close to your parent club. So I don't disagree with anything you said.
Chris Taylor for the Amherst, who's now an assistant coach for the Amherst, was just recently elected to the Hall of Fame in Rochester. And they had a video, montage, tribute to him kind of thing. And they had a couple of his former teammates come on. And what was amazing about Taylor was that he played with, here are the NHLers he played with that are, in my opinion, predominant NHLers. Thomas Vanek, Drew Stafford, Jason Pominville, Paul Gostad, Derek Roy. Okay? All those guys, now you could argue they've some of them have faded, but Pominville and Vanek especially are top, they're top six forwards in the NHL. Both have scored 30 goals multiple times in a season. Pominville flat out said, I am the player today, on not only on but off the ice because of Chris Taylor. Because he roomed with him, he was on a line with him, he watched him work out. He worked with him in the off season. He learned what it meant to be a professional from Chris Taylor. And I think that type of player you're no longer seeing. I mean, Rochester, from the time I was growing up watching him, I remember when Brian Campbell just came in from junior, he was paired with Doug Huda. He roomed with him on the road. He was with him every shift of the game. It seemed like wherever Campbell went, Huda was on the ice with him. And he has said that Huda played a big role in his development. Now, you can argue Brian Campbell is a one-dimensional player, but he's won a Stanley Cup. He was a Norris finalist a couple years ago, and he's this, pretty much the center. Now he's being that guy for Aaron Ekblad.
Yep. That's what you want to see through these veteran guys, but we'll see what kind of difference it does make the coming years now.
Yeah. And also, I mean, that's also been coincided with the rise of European leagues who are willing to pay a little bit more for those type of players as opposed to the NHL teams who are obviously they're got a budget, they're cap strong a little bit, and you can't be giving away $500,000 to a guy who's not going to see any time in your NHL roster.
Yeah, absolutely.
So speaking of the NHL, this year we've seen some interesting things go on. Anything stick out in your mind from the NHL?
Well, the only thing that stuck has been a pretty big negative. Trying to watch my Minnesota Wild, they were predicted by many to be on the edge of the playoff bubble, and they haven't even really lived up to that this year. They currently sit in last place in the Central, and they've been playing a little bit better now with the addition of Devin Dubnyk. He's played very well. I think he's averaging somewhere between 1 and 2 goals a game. I got his first shutout with the Wild the other night, but outside of that, they couldn't get a save for almost 2 months prior to that, and they had lost a whole bunch and kind of fell out of contention. Of course, now they're going to start playing better, and they'll get right on the edge of the playoffs and probably not get in, but they'll be out of the Connor McDavid sweepstakes, and that's all I really noticed this year. Unfortunately, I haven't watched nearly as much as I did last year. But
yeah, and they're in a spot where the way their roster is constructed, I don't think they even really have anybody to sell off. You look at other teams that are struggling. Buffalo especially. Buffalo's got a bunch of guys who are in the last year of their contract, and they can move for future pieces. But Minnesota has got a young core already locked up, and even their veteran guys they've signed for 3-4 years from now.
Yeah, they're all there for quite a while, so they're stuck with what they have. They can't sell the tank, and they've got just too much to just straight lose. So,
I think the loss of Parise's father recently and Suter's father earlier, I think that really threw a wrench into their season. And then, like you said, the goaltending situation has just been abysmal. So
yeah, they lost Josh Harding at the start of the year to a self-inflicted injury, and since then he's had issues with MS again. Darcy Kemper started out the season on an absolute roll and has since dropped the ball. He just got reassigned down to Iowa on a conditioning assignment. guys came back a little bit. The only game I heard of, he got lit up in the first period down there. So,
yeah.
They're in an interesting spot. Nicholas Backstrom hasn't been. He's getting older. He's just not a number one goalie. So,
yeah.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think they might end up having to move one of those signed pieces for a goaltender, because I don't think Dubnyk's the answer either.
No, I would agree with that. And he's, believe he's in the last year of his contract. Hopefully they don't just throw a bunch of money at him if he plays well this year, because he hasn't been a proven starter. I mean, albeit most of it was in Edmonton. But we'll see where they go. You know, it's every day is a little bit different in the NHL, and you never know what's going to happen, but things aren't particularly good for the Wild.
No. I think my biggest surprise has been the Nashville Predators, one of the top teams in the league. I guess I shouldn't have been surprised. Peter Laviolette seems to be a coach that wherever he goes, they immediately have some success. And he's obviously using the foundation that Barry Trotz instilled in those guys of solid defensive work, but he's opened up some of their schemes and their systems, so he's got them playing at a very high level, and it also helps to have, in my opinion, a top three defenseman in Shea Weber, and then also, a top three goaltender in Pekka Rinne when he's healthy.
Yeah. Couple other little surprises: the Islanders lead the Metropolitan Division currently, 65 points. Detroit, a team everybody wasn't quite sure about. I mean, you make assumptions that Detroit's going to make the playoffs because they're Detroit, that they're holding down the number three spot in the Atlantic. The Central Division, outside of your surprise, Nashville, is looking about what you would think. St. Louis and Chicago are both right in there. Colorado fell back, as the stats said they would. Winnipeg is on the edge still. And out west, the Calgary Flames have been a very nice surprise. They've played some great hockey with young talent. Not a lot of household names, but they're doing all they can, and they've looked pretty good at times doing it this year.
Yeah, Calgary is one of those teams that I'm surprised they continue. I mean, I know they have some pieces, but you look at the talent and the names they have on that roster, they're playing above their potential. And it's been for an entire season, so you got to tip your hat to the players for putting in the effort, but also to Bob Hartley for pushing the right buttons.
Yeah, they were a team that was going to be in contention with Buffalo for many of this year, and there they sit. They got Los Angeles behind them. We'll see what LA does for the second half of the year. They're currently two spots out in the Pacific Division. It shall shape up to be an interesting end of the season.
It will be. I'm interested to see how the West folds out, because you know whoever comes out of the West is gonna have some beat up bodies, because it's just a rough and tumble division or conference, and that I think it's a superior conference in my opinion. But whoever comes out of the East, I think whoever comes out of the East is gonna have to be healthy all the way through. And then also hope to catch a beat-up team, I think Pittsburgh's got a chance to come out of the East. I even think the Islanders have a chance because Halak has shown he can steal series in the past. The Rangers are always in contention with Lundqvist.
Yeah.
And even the Canadiens, for that matter, with Price. But none of those teams, you match them up against the Chicago or St. Louis. I forgot to mention Tampa Bay. They've come out of nowhere, not really out of nowhere, but they've.
They're healthy this year. They have the same core that they had for last year's run when they lost Bishop. So they bowed out early, but now that they've got those guys back, they're looking real good this year.
Does Tyler Johnson make your next Olympic team for the U.S.?
I would say probably yes. We're 2 years out from the next winner.
Who do you think he bumps?
I don't know. I
think he bumps Stastny. I think Stastny's gone. You put Johnson up in one of the top two lines, a scorer that they haven't had. I mean, all the other centers the U.S. has are two-way centers, and he's a lot more of a scoring center that they haven't quite had to go with a guy like Kane and a guy like Kessel.
I'll be interested to see what they do with the U.S. Olympic team in the next couple of years. You know, you would think that maybe you'll see some hardcore shakeups out of it because they haven't had much success, and maybe they'll take a different philosophy into it. Obviously, we've got some time to discuss that.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. It's just an interesting thing. I didn't realize he was an American until I was watching some NBC Sports Network coverage that he was an American player, and I would definitely be interested to see him come in 2 years from now. So, a couple things that we've seen. We saw Dan Carcello get suspended for 6 games for the cross check. That was pretty much, out of nowhere. And then also we saw Zach Ronaldo get hit for 8 games. Any thoughts on those?
The Ronaldo hit, I thought it could have been more. He's a guy with a whole book full of suspensions in the past, and if you're going to make a statement to the rest of the league that you can't be doing these things, he's a guy you do it to, and there wouldn't be too much pushback from anybody but him. So I thought they could have thrown more at him, but they didn't, and they're pretty consistent. They make their calls, and suspensions are always right in the same wheelhouse now.
Yeah, I think it just goes to prove that the NHL don't really want those players out of the game, but they don't want those hits. You know, like if they wanted those guys out of the game, you would have seen a 15 game suspension or something like that. That really would have been drastic and gotten those guys out. Or gotten him out of the game, gotten Carcillo out of the game. But a little chaos draws some fans. I mean, the next time Philly and Pittsburgh play, it's going to be a must-watch game because of what they did. And if they meet in the playoffs, it's going to be the same thing. So that's the stuff that, when we talk about, or when anyone talks about a rivalry, that's the stuff that happens in rivalry games. And I think the NHL is trying to walk a delicate line of, we want to appear as though we're against this, but secretly they really want that stuff to happen. You know, they don't want people to get hurt, but they want stupid things to happen that cause fans to want to watch the next game.
Absolutely.
I personally, watched that game, and it was exciting because, okay, you're watching one fight. Okay, who's going to go next? I remember... Growing up, I used to watch games and look, especially when Syracuse would come to town. Okay, who can fight this person? Who's going to fight this guy? Okay, we've got 3 guys who can really throw them. Who are they going to line up with? And you just anticipated that next fight or that next big hit. Like, who's going to do something stupid tonight? And I think the NHL's lost some of that. I think to an extent, I think it's good that they lost some of that. For their image, but also every once in a while, a little chaos helps out.
Yeah, absolutely. It does add the edge to the game. Watching the All-Star game here, because there's no hits, it's pretty quiet unless there's a goal. Because the fans are just kind of watching what's going on. So,
mm-hmm. Absolutely.
There's no energy for the game, I suppose would be a good way to put it.
So, early, we'll get wrapping up here. Who's your early cup picks off the top of your head?
I think the Canadians are going to make another run this year. Out of the East, I think Carey Price he's good enough to take them over. I wouldn't be surprised to see them add a scoring touch or two right before the deadline or so. So I would take them out of the East right now. I think they might have been my preseason prediction. I would have to look that up. I don't remember. Out of the West, I think it's going to be something different this year. Chicago has played well, and they're a team that will turn it on as they start to get close, but I think something else happens this year. I don't think it's Nashville. I don't think Nashville has the experience quite yet. Maybe a St. Louis or a team like that might come out of the West this year.
All right. I am going to go with Tampa Bay in the East. I think that Tampa Bay, they've got three lines of scoring. I think their back end last year was exposed, mostly because Bishop was hurt. He's healthy so far, if he stays healthy, obviously. But also, I really like the addition of Jason Garrison on the back. I really like the pickup. Who's the guy from New York that came down? Stroman. Anton Stroman, I really like that addition. Hedman is playing like the guy he was drafted to be. I think that's exciting. They're an exciting team to watch. So, you know, obviously, I'm always someone who's watched the AHL and really, you know, got behind teams that won. You know, they won a Calder Cup together in Norfolk. You know, so it'd be interesting to watch them. See if they can do it again together in Tampa Bay in the NHL, and then out west, I'm scared of Anaheim's goaltending. They haven't. That's the only thing about their team that really scares me. Their skating, their skaters have been great. LA, if they're in, that's, you know, if they can make the playoffs, that's the big question. I don't think anybody else out of the Pacific really. You know, Vancouver's got Miller and the Sedins, but they're really a one-line team, in my opinion.
Yeah, they're nothing that scares you when you need the depth.
No, and you know, like you said, St. Louis is dangerous, especially now that they added Tarasenko has really come on, and Schwartz has come on as a second line or secondary scoring, really, you know, primary scoring, and made Oshie, Backes, and Steen the secondary scoring. You know, in my opinion.
And of course, don't forget now they have Brady Brodeur in the front office. So
yeah, and that's a whole mess that I'm sick of hearing about. I don't know about you.
Yep. I agree.
I'm just like so done with Marty. But I'll take Chicago. I think Chicago's got that it factor. You know, they just know how to win. They've got dynamic scoring. They've got just grit and determination. They're not physical. I mean, they're tough to play against, but they're not physically like, we're going to beat you into submission. But they don't back down, you know, and you know, I would take Jonathan Toews on my team any day of the week and, to lead my team. So I'll say Chicago and Tampa Bay.
Not bad at all. And can't really go wrong with either pick there. So,
yeah. So any final thoughts before we wrap up my son's squirming around up there, according to the video monitor I've got in front of me.
No, I think that'll do it for me. Got a little hockey talk out of the way, and we'll see. Hopefully we can get some more in here. Not weekly, obviously, but every once in a while.
Yeah, we'll probably get on again before the playoffs start here and you know, add our 2 cents about who's in and who's out.
All right,
well. Hope everyone enjoys this podcast whenever I get a chance to put it up here this afternoon, hopefully. Since today is Super Bowl Sunday, Super Bowl pick for today, tonight.
I'm hoping both lose, but I think New England probably wins.
All right, you think New England. I think it'll be a good game. I think they both match up, and they both kind of, like I said, they have that it factor. But I'm a little... interested to see how Seattle does. I think I'm going to go with Seattle.
All right.
So, thank you for listening. If anybody actually downloads this, and Otto, thank you for letting me talk hockey and getting it out of my brain so I can make room for more.
There you go.
All right. For Otto Eisenberg, this is Dan Prong and Throughway Puck, Season 3, Episode 1. We'll talk to you later.